Welcome to Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine's Fiction Podcast. I'm EQMM's editor, Janet Hutchings. Our reading this month is by John Morgan Wilson, the author of several novels in a series starring journalist sleuth Benjamin Justice, as well as two novels co-written with bandleader Peter Duchin. The California author is a winner of both the Mystery Writers of America's Edgar Allan Poe Award and the Lambda Literary Award. He began contributing stories to EQMM in 2003. For this podcast, he chose to read his story, Edward at the Edge, from the January 2005 issue of EQMM.
"He asked to borrow my gun," Harry said. "My God!" Cynthia turned to him, her dark eyes widening. "When?" "Last night, as he walked the dog. He stopped by, said he wanted to talk. Made up some story about an intruder down at your place. Said he needed a gun for protection until he could get one of his own." Harry tugged at his well-trimmed beard, smiling mischievously. "You and Edward haven't had any intruders lately, have you, Cynthia?" She rolled her eyes, as if Edward would ever have the backbone to shoot one, or do anything else even slightly out of the ordinary. "Except what we have in mind for him," Harry said. Her voice rose with excitement. "You really think he could do it?" "When you think about it, for someone like Edward, it's the most logical step in the world." She tapped him on his strong patrician nose, grinning impishly. Dr. Harry Braxton putting his brilliant psychiatrist's mind to the task. "Brilliant might be an overstatement," Harry said, with just the right touch of modesty, leaving room for doubt. Cynthia grew quiet, listening to a Miles Davis classic playing on Harry's state-of-the-art sound system, the kind she and Edward could have purchased years ago if he hadn't been so ridiculously frugal. It was Harry who'd introduced her to jazz, in this very room, one afternoon during a visit when Edward had wandered down the street looking for bargains at a neighborhood garage sale. She never played jazz when Edward was home. He said it made him nervous. When it came to music, the most adventurous Edward got was Kenny G. Cynthia shuddered, thinking about all the years she'd wasted with timorous, mild-mannered Edward since their wedding just after graduate school. At least she'd been able to share these last few years with Harry, even if they had to sneak around stealing intimate moments with the shades drawn. "So I wrapped my Ruger in a towel and gave it to him," Harry said, deliberately sounding nonchalant, while working to keep a degree of confidence and authority in his voice, knowing the powerful effect it had on her. "It's a 9mm. Nice gun, blue plate, doesn't weigh much. Bought it on impulse from a catalog last year." He shrugged casually for extra effect. "Don't ask me why." "That's one of the things I like about you, Harry. That passionate, impulsive nature of yours, following where your heart leads you." He grabbed her and surprised her with a kiss. "Like that?" "Exactly like that." They kissed again, longer this time, before she asked him, "Was it loaded, the gun, when you gave it to Edward?" When he nodded, Cynthia's lovely face grew somber. She turned away toward the picture window that looked down the hill at the three-bedroom house she and Edward had shared for nearly a decade. She'd wanted a house up here with a view like this, but Edward had balked at the prices. "You were right, Harry. He's thinking about doing it." Harry smoothed down the corners of his thick blonde mustache with a thumb and forefinger of the same hand, feeling almost giddy. "Oh yes, I'm sure of it. Edward's at the brink. All he needs is a push." "You're the psychiatrist, Harry." She laughed, but it was false, a tad frightened. "Who would know better than you?" "Also his best friend since high school," Harry said. "Don't forget that. If anyone understands what makes Edward Strathmore tick, it's Harry Braxton." He went to her, slipped an arm around her soft shoulders, kissed the delicious nape of her neck. Together they stared down at the house where Edward could be seen in the backyard, weeding his garden with dreadful precision. Such a neat, tidy house, she thought, with the shutters so free of dust, the borders of the yard so perfect, the lawn so carefully clipped. Neat, tidy and boring, just like Edward. Just like their childless marriage, just like their tedious life. She tried to think of what it was about him that she'd once loved and admired. She couldn't, except perhaps his utter devotion and dependability. Funny how people changed, she mused, how their needs and desires and dreams change. Except for Edward, of course, who had about as much imagination as an accountant, which happened to be his chosen trade. It's hard to envision Edward going through with it, Cynthia said. She laughed grimly. It would be so out of character, so upsetting to his routine. Au contraire, my dear. Suicide is the ultimate act of control, a way of bringing order and finality to unbearable feelings of chaos and despair. They watched him move to another row of flowers, plucking weeds robotically, the way he did every Saturday morning from 10 to 12. Edward's deeply depressed. Always has been, truth be told. He's managed to get by all these years, to cover it up, through his obsessive orderliness. Now he's at a point when he senses things aren't working out. He's terrified that he's losing control, particularly where you're involved. She glanced up into Harry's handsome, bearded face. Like Edward, he was in his early 40s, yet there was still a youthful, robust quality about him that thin, pale Edward had never exhibited, not even during their university days. She'd urged Edward to grow a mustache and buy some stylish clothes, then to trade his spectacles for contacts, finally to let people call him Ed or Eddie. Edward had reacted each time as if she'd suggested something as radical as a sex change. I've pulled away from him, she said. Little by little, the way you suggested. He seemed confused at first, just as you said he would. Lately, he seemed more troubled. Because he worships you, darling. Harry brushed the luxuriant dark curls off her ear, gently nibbled the alabaster lobe. Can't say I blame him. Lucky, undeserving bastard to have you all these years. She arched her shapely brows. You really think that Edward worships me, that he has feelings that strong? Harry nodded. He spoke of it just last week while we were shopping for fertilizer. The distance he feels between the two of you. It's pure anguish for him, and it's eroding what's left of his low self-esteem. I'm telling you, Cynthia, he's right at the edge. He just needs something to push him over. Her eyes flickered with dark amusement. Something or someone? It's time, Harry said, with that assurance and resolution that made him so attractive to her. Time to tell him you're going to leave him, that you no longer love him and never will. He'll blame himself, of course. He'll beg you to give him another chance, promise to behave differently, do anything you ask. And I'll stand firm, she said, telling him that life with him is unbearable, that it's time for a change. She thought about the money she and Edward had saved at his insistence, invested conservatively in piling up, when they might have used it to travel or buy a sports car or collect fine art, as Harry did. She thought of the equity in the house, sizable because Edward had studied the real estate market so prudently and purchased at the right time in the right neighborhood. She thought of a life insurance policy Edward had insisted on taking out on himself as the primary breadwinner. Its suicide clause expired now that the policy had reached its 3-year point. There was even a generous trust fund, Edward's inheritance, that they'd never touched. Well over $2 million in sum waiting to be spent. Down the hill in their square backyard, he rose at the end of the flower bed, brushed soil off the knees of his discount pants exactly as she knew he would. Right on cue, he dropped a handful of weeds into one of the hefty bags he purchased in bulk to save money, the ones he stored with all the other items he bought on sale and stacked in his well-organized garage. She shuddered in revulsion. Change. There's nothing Edward detests more than change. Exactly, Harry said. At dinner that night, Cynthia informed Edward that their marriage was over. Predictably, he was distressed but kept his emotions under a tight wire, without weeping or even raising his voice. Just as Harry had foreseen, Edward begged her to reconsider, imploring her to give him another chance. She refused to discuss it, telling him her decision was irrevocable. Not surprisingly, he insisted on doing the dishes. It was just what he'd done at other points of tension throughout their marriage. Tend to the kitchen, mow the lawn, paint the patio furniture, reorganizing the garage. Much the way he rearranged and compartmentalized his feelings as if they were so many loose screws needing nothing more than placement in the proper cabinet drawers. It had driven her nearly to madness until now. Now it couldn't have pleased her more, since it fit so nicely into the plan she and Harry Braxton had concocted over the past couple of years. In the spare minutes they stole while entangled in the luxurious silk sheets of Harry's big bed. After their rapturous lovemaking, Harry had moved to this neighborhood to be close to his best friend, Edward, whose instinct for stability was something the more mercurial Harry had felt he needed in his own life. But Harry had stayed because he'd fallen in love with Cynthia, as she had fallen in love with him. At first they'd kept the relationship at a distance, waving discreetly up and down the hill to each other when they felt it was safe. Later she'd take up power walking for fitness, which allowed her to trek up for the occasional rendezvous with her beloved, which had left them aching for one another almost desperately in between their hurried trysts. Edward would never grant her a divorce, they both knew that. He was Catholic, for one thing. But even more than that, such a drastic alteration in the seamless pattern of his life would be unthinkable. Cynthia could have left him, of course, but with nothing to show for the precious years she'd sacrificed to his numbing monotony. So Harry Braxton, a psychiatrist with special insight into Edward's tepid personality, had come up with a bold and foolproof plan. When Edward was finally gone, conveniently removed from their lives by his own hand, they'd move, marry, and begin living life in a way that Edward was incapable of, financed by the money he'd so diligently hoarded. Diabolically clever, that's how Harry had characterized it, although a trace of concern nagged at her, faint but persistent, like an unsolved line in one of Edward's Sunday crosswords. After dinner, while Edward washed and dried the dishes, a dishwasher he'd long ago decided was wasteful of power and water, Cynthia took a walk. 10 minutes after leaving the house, winding her way up the hill, she was in Harry's muscular arms. His kisses were forceful, uninhibited, molten, with all the spontaneity and passion Edward could never muster. After making furious love that was consummated by necessity within minutes, they peeked through the curtains of Harry's bedroom window. Down the hill, through the kitchen window, they could see Edward wiping the sink and countertops with a paper towel that he spread out afterward to dry and be used again. Cynthia slipped a hand around Harry's waist. "When do you think he'll do it? When do you think he'll do it?" "Not right away. He'll have to ponder it a while. And he'll want to put all his affairs in order, feel completely in control before he pulls the trigger. I dread finding his body. That's the part I fear the most. Don't worry, darling. He won't do it at home. He wouldn't want to make a mess. And he'll be thinking about you. He wouldn't want you to find him that way." She chuckled uncomfortably. "Edward's considerable to a fault. I'll give him that. Besides," Harry went on, "you know that a suicide in a house can bring its property value down. Full disclosure required of the seller and all that. Edward could never stand the thought of that, not when renting a cheap motel room or driving to the secluded seashore would be so much more practical." Cynthia turned to Harry, suddenly alarmed. "What if they figure out that we drove him to it? Can we be arrested, Harry? Can we be charged with anything?" His laughter was rich, warm. "Sometimes you're as silly as you are beautiful. Don't make fun of me, Harry. I'm scared, that's all." He pulled her close, rubbing her bare arm. "Of course you are. It's a serious business what we're up to. But there's no possible way they can find us criminally culpable. Think about it. A man who's obsessed with control realizes his marriage is coming apart just as he's facing middle age. He borrows my gun, which is registered and legal, fearing a burglar. Nothing so unusual in that. But you're a psychiatrist. You'd never loan a gun to an emotionally troubled man, least of all a friend. My talks with Harry have been purely confidential. Should someone ask, I'll say he seemed the most well-adjusted fellow in the world. For all appearances, he was. As far as any pressure that you've placed on him, no one knows about that. Edward's the last person to share his troubles with anyone. Except his closest friend, she said, a smile tugging at the corners of her pretty mouth. You think of everything, don't you? You sexy scoundrel. Didn't you tell me that he recently increased his life insurance? Doubled it. Is that a problem? Not at all, Harry said. It will look like the final act of a man contemplating the end of his life and leaving behind some extra financial security for his grieving widow. He turned to her, his eyes bright with amusement. And when we spend it in some exotic, faraway place, we'll toast dutiful, dependable Edward. I've always wanted to retire while I was still young. Psychiatry's a nice profession, I suppose, if it weren't for all those annoying patients. They erupted into wonderful, liberating laughter, in a way she and Edward never had. She marveled at Harry's sense of humor, always teasing, yet with just a grain of truth to it. Sometimes she felt she could love him for his intelligence alone. Expect an investigation, he said. Strictly routine, nothing to worry about. What if the police link the two of us? How can they, Cynthia? We've been careful, incredibly discreet. Even if we've been seen together, it's natural enough. You're the wife of my best friend. We made love right in the bedroom Edward and I share. It was just that once last month when he was away. He asked me to come down to keep you company, remember? For all appearances, my being in your home was perfectly innocent, should anyone have seen us. She moistened her upper lip with the tip of her tongue. I'll never forget that night. You were like a tiger, Harry, in the bed, on the floor. He laughed uproariously. I believe I've still got carpet burns from all the thrashing about we did, and that was before you tore my clothes off like a madwoman. His laughter died as her dark eyes dimmed and grew moist. What is it, sweetheart? I wish we could go away right now to some private island on the other side of the world. Soon enough, my love. For now, though, we shouldn't see each other again until it's all resolved. Resolved. She shivered, hugging herself and nestling against his furry chest. Such a euphemistic word for what Edward's going to do. What if something goes awry? What if... He lifted her chin, made her look at him. I'm an accomplished psychiatrist and Edward's oldest friend, who spends almost as much time with him as you do. I know Edward Strathmore like I know myself, and I've never known anyone as predictable. She clutched him fiercely. Do you love me, Harry? What kind of question is that? Of course I do. There's no one else? I haven't even looked at another woman in years, let alone touched one. He laughed, thinking back. The names in my little black book, all from years ago. Women whose faces I can't even remember anymore. I'd suggest you take the phone numbers and call them if it would reassure you, except that I tossed the damn book out months ago. Of course you did. She shrugged, feeling foolish. Forget I even asked. His grin was wide now. I've spent far more time with Edward in recent years than anyone of the opposite sex. He glanced toward the mantelpiece and a framed photo of himself and Edward, their arms around each other's shoulders, the only photo on display in the house. I imagine more than a few people are beginning to wonder just which gender I fancy seeing me about with Edward so often. She ran her fingers through the hair on his chest, her smile demure, her voice a purr. Not me, Harry. I don't wonder for one moment. He separated from her, suddenly serious. Go back down to the house, darling. Be polite, but cool and distant. Begin packing a few things so that he knows you're serious about leaving. Let it sink in and eat away at him. Trust me, his sense of failure and loss will become excruciating. For a man like Edward, suicide will be the next natural step. It's just a matter of time. 5 days later, Harry was hanging an Andy Warhol print above the long couch in the living room when the telephone rang. The print was one in a limited edition, and it cost him more than he had a reasonable right to spend, but it was a spectacular Warhol. Brilliant in its simplicity, a deadpan comment on the banality of contemporary life, and it delighted Harry each time he glanced at it. He made a final adjustment, aligning the frame, and grabbed the telephone on the third ring. It was Cynthia, calling from a payphone. "I thought we agreed, sweetheart. No more contact until it's finished." "But he's behaving strangely, Harry." "How so?" "For the last few days he seemed so happy. He insisted we go out to lunch or dinner several times, something we haven't done since we were first married. We even went out to a movie instead of renting. He held hands with me as we walked down the street. He was never comfortable holding hands in public before. He kissed me right in front of the Levinsons. I've never seen him like this, so at ease, almost blissful." "That's not unexpected at all," Harry said. "I don't understand." "It's not uncommon for those who know the end is at hand to suddenly have a huge weight lifted from them. You often see it in the terminally ill when they finally accept the finality of things. They stop resisting and settle into a sense of serenity and calm, that blissfulness in Edward that you spoke of. One sometimes sees it in suicides as well, when they've truly resolved to follow through with it. It's the blessed relief that finally comes with surrender." "I should just go along, then, stick with our plan." "Has he said anything about financial matters, a living trust? He had me sign some papers, updating our affairs. You see, didn't I tell you? I know I'm worrying needlessly, Harry, but still..." "Edward's at peace with his decision, Cynthia. Leave him alone as much as possible. Keep your distance emotionally. As I said before, it's just a matter of time." "Are you going to feel guilty?" Her voice was tremulous. "About what we've done?" His reply was staunch, unwavering. Just what he felt she needed to hear at this crucial juncture. "I would, Cynthia, if Edward had a clue about enjoying life. But life, I'm afraid, has been wasted on Edward." "I love you, Harry." "I love you too, darling. Now go about your routine as if nothing is amiss. And best not to call me again, not even from a payphone. The next time we speak, Edward will be gone. It will just be the two of us, forever and ever." Harry was enjoying a glass of award-winning Pinot Grigio with a nicely grilled salmon steak and sautéed shiitake mushrooms when the doorbell rang. The dusk was deep, so he flicked on the porch light. He opened the door to find two men in off-the-rack suits standing on his doorstep, looking awfully serious, even dour. "Harry Braxton?" the taller man asked. "Yes, I'm Dr. Braxton." The taller man showed Harry a detective's gold shield, then introduced himself and his partner. "We'd just come from the Strathmore residence down the hill." The detective glanced behind him, even though the road up here was remote and no one was out. "Perhaps we could come in for a moment and speak more privately." Cynthia must have sent them up in her place, Harry thought. Too distraught over Edward's death, she'd no doubt convinced them to deliver the news to Edward's best friend herself. A nice touch on Cynthia's part, if a bit uninspected. "Of course," Harry said, laboring for the most appropriate words. "I hope... Is anything the matter? Is Edward... Are the Strathmores all right?" When the door was shut and they'd crossed the entry, they stood facing each other in the living room. "You and Mr. Strathmore are good friends?" the taller detective asked.
"Quite."
"For some time now? Edward and I have been best friends since high school. What is it, detective? You're beginning to alarm me." You moved up here into this neighborhood because of Mr. Strathmore? You might say that. Edward tipped me to this house when the market was down, and it was affordable. Told me the property values could only go up, so I purchased up here. Harry smiled for their benefit. Edward was right, of course. Usually is. You're fond of Mr. Strathmore, then. As I said, we're quite close. And you're happy living up here? Yes, of course. What is this about? The taller detective glanced for a long moment at the photo of Harry and Edward on the mantelpiece. Then he turned abruptly, crossing to the picture window and looking out. Up here, where you can keep an eye on the Strathmore's house? I enjoy the view, Harry said. Yes, I'm sure you do. Do you ever see Mrs. Strathmore down there, Dr. Braxton? I suppose, now and again. Never gave it much thought. What can I do for you, detectives? Has something happened? The shorter detective glanced around the house, his eyes settling on the unfinished meal and glass of wine at one end of the dining room table. You live alone, Dr. Braxton? That's right. Never married? Came close once or twice, thought better of it. Not the marrying kind? I wouldn't say that. It's just that the right woman never came along. I find these questions annoying, Detective. I really wish you'd explain yourself. Dating anyone now? Any special lady friend? Harry's face remained rigid while his mind raced, trying to sort things out, trying to stay a step or two ahead of them. Above all, he thought, they must not find out how he felt about Cynthia. I'm devoted to my psychiatric practice. I haven't had much time for dating, to be quite frank. Not for years. The taller detective stepped away from the window, joining them. Good-looking guy like you, professional man with a nice place like this? No one at all, Dr. Braxton? I believe I answered your question, Harry said. You seem to find plenty of time to spend with Mr. Strathmore, though. We enjoy each other's company, as many male friends do. How about the wife? Cynthia, what about her? The taller detective's eyes leveled on Harry's. You close to Mrs. Strathmore as well? Not really. Harry smirked, then worried that he might have overdone it. Cynthia's all right, I suppose, if you like that kind of woman. What kind of woman would that be? She's attractive, of course. I just happen not to find her very interesting. Put up with her for Mr. Strathmore's sake, do you? That's awfully harsh. Harry shrugged. But there's some truth to it, I suppose. We tolerate each other, Cynthia and I. Spend much time alone with her? Never. Harry wished he hadn't blurted it out so forcefully. He smiled, trying to soften it. Certainly not that comes to mind. Once or twice, possibly. The shorter detective shoved his hands into his pants pockets, jingling change, and asked offhandedly, "Ever been in the Strathmore's bedroom, Dr. Braxton?" "I beg your pardon?" "It's a simple enough question. Have you ever spent time in their bedroom?" "Certainly not." "You'd remember if you had." "Absolutely." Harry stepped away and glanced out the window. Down at the house, emergency vehicles and lights could be seen out front. "Something's happened." He turned back to the detectives. "For God's sake, tell me what's going on." The shorter detective stepped forward, glancing down the hill. Then he raised his chin to look Harry directly in the eye. "Mrs. Strathmore's been murdered, Dr. Braxton." "What?" Harry felt as if all the air had been sucked from him, while his legs turned wobbly and his face tingled and burned. "You feel okay, Dr. Braxton?" The taller detective studied Harry closely, with a keen air of a laboratory scientist. "Perhaps you should sit down." "I'm fine," Harry said, but his chin trembled. "You're sure about Cynthia?" The shorter detective glanced at his watch. Mr. Strathmore returned from the supermarket not quite an hour ago. As he was unloading groceries from his car, he heard a gunshot from inside the house. While someone escaped out the rear, Mr. Strathmore ran in to find his wife in the master bedroom. She'd been shot once and was dying. No. Harry backed up several steps until he reached a sofa and sat down heavily. He stared at the floor a moment before looking up. Not Cynthia. This can't have happened. Before she died, the short detective said, she told her husband that you'd come to the house while he was gone, that you'd forced yourself in, intending violence. Harry's eyes were wild. That's not true. She fled to the bedroom, but you caught up with her. Chased her about the room, fell at least once to the floor as you grabbed for her. There was quite a commotion. That's preposterous, insane. You shot her once in the chest, then ran out just before Mr. Strathmore came in. She managed to say enough to her husband before she died to clearly identify you as her killer. But why would I? Harry dropped his head, holding it in his hands. Edward's making this up. He looked up, blinking back tears. He killed her, don't you see? She was going to leave him. How would you know that? Harry froze, swallowing dryly. Beneath his Italian silk shirt, he felt perspiration trickle from each armpit. The seconds ticked by like minutes. He had to say something, so he said, "Edward told me." "Mr. Strathmore did." Harry nodded almost desperately, "Yes." "Well, that would differ from his account of things, Dr. Braxton." Harry felt hot tears on his face and heard his voice rise in pitch. "Don't you understand? They had a miserable life. The neighbors tell another story. They seemed quite affectionate with each other. The Levinsons saw them just the other day, kissing like newlyweds." The taller detective sat down on the couch under the Warhol, facing Harry. "Why don't you tell us about your attraction to Mr. Strathmore, Dr. Braxton?" "My what?" "He told us about the feelings you've had for him since high school, how they interfered with your relationships with women, how you followed him here even after he married, how you bought a house in the neighborhood to be close to him, a house that allowed you to see him every day, if only from a distance. But that's not true, not the way he's twisting it. He said he's tried to be kind, to remain friendly, while doing everything possible to discourage your deeper feelings. He feels you've become obsessed with him. He blames himself for letting things get so tragically out of control." "This is absolutely crazy what you're saying." Harry wiped away tears and sat up straight, raising his chin, fighting for control. "I won't hear another word of it." The shorter detective jingled his coins again, then stopped. "You came to resent Mrs. Strathmore, didn't you, Dr. Braxton? To the point that you wanted her out of the picture." "Absolutely not." "Can you account for your time, say, for the past hour or so?" "I've been here, cooking and eating a light dinner." "Alone?" "Yes." "It's only a 10-minute walk up the hill, isn't it? Less going down. At dusk, with a hooded jacket or a sweater, you'd never be seen. Do you own such a piece of apparel, Dr. Braxton?" "Of course I do. Who doesn't?" On the couch, the taller detective leaned forward, his elbows on his knees. "Do you also own a gun?" Harry swallowed hard. "I loaned my gun to Edward." "Ruger, 9mm? "Yes, but..." "Mr. Strathmore told us he hates guns," the shorter detective said. "Said they scare the heck out of him. He can't even bear to touch them." Harry threw up his hands. "I'm telling you, he asked to borrow my gun." His fingerprints would be on it then. Nausea rose in Harry like a fast tide. "Maybe not." His voice grew weak. "I gave it to him wrapped in a cloth." "We found a 9mm Ruger in the bedroom," the shorter detective went on, "near the body, along with a shell casing. You must have dropped the gun in your haste to flee." "Stop talking this way." "Why do I have the feeling that we'll find your fingerprints on that gun, but not Mr. Strathmore's?" All at once, Harry understood exactly what was happening, the brilliance and perverse perfection of it. To his surprise, his nausea subsided and he began to relax. His voice became quiet, calm. He probably wore gloves when he shot her, then got rid of them, washed up to get rid of any gunshot residue, then picked up the phone and dialed 911. The other detective nodded unconvincingly. I suppose that's possible. His shrug was like an insult. I suppose anything's possible. You're seeing this all wrong, both of you. Harry heard his voice as if he were someone else, listening in on the conversation. His protest sounded rote now, without conviction, as if all the steam had gone out of them. You said you'd never been in that bedroom, the other detective said. You were very clear about that. Yes, that's what I told you. Harry chuckled grimly to himself. Just as Edward knew I would. Then the forensics team won't find any trace evidence suggesting otherwise, the other cop said. Hair, skin, threads, or other particles we can match to you or a piece of your clothing. Because they're going to go over every inch of that room, Dr. Braxton. They're going to check every item in this house for a match. If you've ever been in that bedroom, we're going to know. Harry thought of the wild, wonderful hour or two he'd spent in that bedroom with Cynthia, of that memorable night when they'd made animal love, just that once when he'd come down to keep her company, at Edward's request. I'd like a glass of water, Harry said, if you don't mind. He started to rise, but the shorter detective pushed him gently back down. I'll get it for you, Dr. Braxton. There's Perrier in the fridge, if it's not too much trouble. I think we can do that for you, the detective said. When he was gone, the other detective said to Harry, Tell me about your good friend, Mr. Strathmore. Tell me what it is that draws you so strongly to him. Harry stared past the detective at the new Warhol print, not really seeing it. A profound sense of calm had settled over him, something close to bliss. Edward's very orderly, very predictable. Harry sounded remote, as if his mind was in some exotic locale far, far away. A private island, perhaps, on the other side of the world. Before he makes a decision, before he acts, Edward thinks everything through very carefully. Nothing out of place, nothing left to chance. He's not the impulsive type, then, like you. No. Harry smiled wanly. Not the impulsive type like me. We'll be going down to the station shortly, Dr. Braxton. We'll read you your rights. You'll want to get a lawyer. Yes, of course. The shorter detective brought Harry a Waterford goblet of cold Perrier from the kitchen, handing it to him with a fleeting look of compassion. May I, Harry said, indicating the picture window. Sure, why not? The two detectives watched Harry closely as he rose and crossed to the big window. It was dark out now, and the lights were on in Edward's house. He always kept them off as long as possible, well into dusk to save on his electric bill. Harry could see him standing at the kitchen sink, getting water in a plastic cup, straight from the tap. For a moment, Edward looked up, directly at the window where Harry was standing, his eyes fixed and unblinking. At least it seemed that way to Harry. Then Edward lowered the shade, while Harry raised the crystal goblet to sip his sparkling water.
Edward at the Edge is copyrighted by John Morgan Wilson. Music for the podcast is by Adish Kuban and was obtained from the Community Audio section of the Internet Archive. Mixing for the podcast was done by Jackie Sherbo. You can subscribe to Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine, where you'll find more stories like this one, by visiting our website at www.elleryqueenmysterymagazine.com.